Welcome back to The New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. We've got fake cops busted by just regular corrupt cops. But first, Seymour Hersh says official U.S. account of Osama's death is full of lies. This from the Christian Science Monitor veteran investigative reporter Seymour Hersh thinks the official U.S. account of the death of Osama bin Laden is full of lies. And he's written a lengthy piece in the London Review of Books detailing what he says is the truth. According to Hersh, bin Laden was a Pakistani captive. A walk-in informer told the U.S. the al-Qaeda leader was in Pakistan. He wasn't found by a heroic CIA effort. Under U.S. pressure, Pakistan agreed to turn bin Laden over, but insisted on a staged Navy SEAL team raid to make things look good. In essence, bin Laden was assassinated, as he was the only person shot in the famous Abbottabad compound. Bin Laden's body wasn't buried at sea. SEAL members threw parts from their helicopter over the Hindu Kush Mountains. The cover story was going to involve OBL's death in a fictitious drone strike, but Barry rendered this inoperative by rushing to announce the terror leader's demise a week earlier than U.S. and Pakistani officials had planned. Hersh doesn't seem to have a lot of sources for all this. His story appears to be largely based on interviews with an anonymous retired U.S. intel official who wasn't knowledgeable about the initial intelligence about bin Laden's presence in Abbottabad. Several U.S. CIA contractors and Assad Durrani, a retired Pakistani general who was head of the Pakistani intelligence service in the early 1990s. Now, James, the White House pushed back hard, saying that Hersh's story is false. And this really opens up just a strange back and forth. And we'll get into in just a moment, James, a term called limited hangout. But why is this story now back in the news with Osama? And I would actually first note, they rushed the story to land on May 1st, I think. Our more esoterically astute observers would note, James.
Yes, exactly like we observed 4 years ago during the Illuminati May Day blood sacrifice ritual season with the royal wedding and Osama, which we covered on New World Next Week at the time. But yes.
Accomplished. All those.
Exactly. Yes. Very, very interesting. There are so many different threads to this, and I guess we can say that there are certain aspects of this story that make certain amount of sense. The idea that this was an operation that they were going to announce as a drone strike a week later or whatever, and then suddenly had to come up with something on the fly, would at least account for why this was such a ridiculously, horribly constructed lie that they immediately had to start retracting various parts of the fairy tale that they were constructing about using his wife as a shield and the firefight and all of that ridiculous stuff that they were throwing out there and immediately retracting, to making it absolutely plain that it was a lie. But there are other parts of this story that make no sense whatsoever, as in the Pakistani ISI colluding with the U.S. to allow the choppers into the country so that they can do the raid on Osama, and then they would announce it a week later, rather than just because apparently he was being protected by the ISI. Why wouldn't they just have killed him, dumped his body in Afghanistan, and said, hey, U.S., you take it over? I mean, that would have been a bajillion times easier to do rather than this elaborate construction. Whatever. All of it is just, as you alluded to, limited hangout. And I don't know, Hersh, whether he's a dupe in this or a willing participant. I don't care. This is that anonymous source reporting that we can so obviously rely on, right? But whatever it is, this story is being put out right now for, I think, a specific geopolitical reason. And it's a very interesting tangential little nugget that's buried in this story that has to do with Saudi Arabia. And I think that's where this, ultimately, this propaganda, there's just a seed of a kernel of a piece of propaganda in here about Saudi Arabia that I think is probably the operative and functional part. So much more to say about this, but I'll be writing about it on the Forecaster this weekend, so people can look for that, and I'll talk more about the Saudi connection to this story.
Excellent. So limited hangout, I think, is actually kind of a Nixonian term that we learn from the tapes, where they talk about, well, this bad info is going to come out, so let's control the release of how it comes out, and it'll give us some sort of, you know, limited hangout, they're heard to say on the tapes. So this has become a part of sort of intel parlance, or at least those critical of the intelligence community, limited hangout. And I think maybe someone like Seymour Hersh, just as you noted, on purpose or not, is very useful in situations like this. If we go all the way back to the My Lai massacre, he was able to document that one time in Vietnam that, you know, we killed a bunch of people, as though that was the isolated murderous event in a huge debacle of Vietnam. He seems to come out at these times to sort of give the intelligence community cover. I'll include a flashback link. Hirsch facilitates a limited CIA hangout, but covers up official involvement in a chemical attack, this going back several years ago. And James, this new Seymour Hirsch story doesn't get into how the SEAL team that pulled this thing off were somehow all murdered a couple of weeks later. There's no part of this that makes any sense, and I'm glad you've mentioned the Saudi.
And we should note, because I just realized I didn't actually explicitly state this, I don't think we need to state this for our audience, but we should state it, Osama bin Laden was almost certainly dead however many number of years before this raid took place. So whatever happened in Abbottabad, it almost 100% was not the killing of Osama bin Laden. We should state that just for the record, for those who may not know that that's our take on this.
That's maybe what you call burying the lead. We should say Osama was already dead. This story just helps to try and catapult the propaganda that he wasn't dead and that it was still a raid and that we did kill bin Laden. That's the fiction. Having said all that, James, let's move to our second story this week for a really strange one. And I think, again, the stories in some ways go together because we're left sort of wondering who's watching who and who claims to be in charge. Fake cops claiming to be descendants of Knights Templars arrested in California. The Masonic Fraternal Police Department ruse foiled, three arrested. This just from straight up NBC. Three people, including an aide to the California Attorney General, have been arrested over an elaborate ruse involving a fake police force claiming ties to the Knights of Templar, officials in California said on late Tuesday night. L.A. County Sheriff's Department said law enforcement agencies across Southern California started receiving letters in January from the Masonic Fraternal Police Department requesting meetings with local police chiefs. Calls to set up meetings with the group soon followed. The Sheriff's Department said suspicions were aroused when, at one such meeting, the MFPD members couldn't answer simple questions about their jurisdiction or their mission. The members claim to be descendants of the 3,000-year-old Knights of Templar and exercise widespread jurisdiction, it added. Detectives conducted a thorough investigation in collaboration with several law enforcement agencies and determined the MFPD was not a legitimate police agency, the Sheriff's Department added, saying that raids on two addresses uncovered weapons, badges, uniforms, and police-type vehicles. It said that David Henry, Tonette Hayes, and Brandon Keel were arrested on suspicion of impersonating peace officers. One was also arrested under suspicion of perjury under oath, and Brandon Keel of misuse of government identification. It should be noted, Brandon Keel is an aide to the California Attorney General Kamala Harris. Detectives believe the trio were, quote, attempting to deceive individuals in the community for a purpose yet to be determined, end quote. James, I'll include a couple of other really interesting articles, sort of the background on the story. It's actually fascinating and kind of hilarious to read the LA Times report that gets into the history of the Knights Templar. You even have to pull back and go, oh, that's funny. You guys are having to write about this now. This is a bizarre story, James, and it reminds me of actually a series that I've been watching recently. But I just want to, what's your initial gut reaction about this story?
Confusion? I've never heard of this organization before, so it's, I don't know what to make of this. I don't know if this is significant. The only reason I think this could be significant is because, as you noted, this Keel character was actually working in the DOJ office for California. So this isn't just some weird isolated crank out of nowhere. I mean, this is someone at any rate. And I note that there is a Masonic Fraternal Police Department.org, which at the time that we're recording this, I'm getting a 404 and can't access the site, but I'm on the way back archive of this site right now. And it's, I don't know. There's some, it has a our partners section with Georgia State Patrol, Iowa State Patrol, Colorado State Patrol. And it looks like an officially typed site, but again, what is this organization? Where did it come from? Is it operating? Who is part of it? I don't have any clues about this. I think this is a great thing to open up for the open source community out there to try to dig up some information about this group and where it's coming from and who's part of it. And obviously tying it into that Knights Templar history that they're claiming to be a part of, but anyone can claim anything. I don't know if there's any there.
I can't help but think of how this sort of ties into now how conspiracy culture has gone mainstream. And in a lot of ways, James, our work over the last decade has been a part of that. I mean, the work that we've done has pushed a lot of these sort of hidden and esoteric and occult things that we've all discovered through our own research and through open source, you know, discussion, just like you're talking about. I can't help but think that this is all, it's, you know, hip hop and Illuminati and all. It's mixed into this bizarre gobbledygook that I think in a lot of ways maybe doesn't mean anything. And we have a lot of sick minds in a lot of ways who are just sort of making things up and doing things. And it's a lot of sort of, you know, we're copycat effect off the television. And so I mentioned television. I started watching, James, there's an original Netflix series called Daredevil. And it's, of course, the Marvel superhero, the blind, you know, lawyer by day and, you know, ass-kicking superhero by night. I'm watching this series, and James, because I'm wondering if it might be worth going into on a Navigating Netflix episode or perhaps even a Film, Literature, and the New World Order. It's basically a ultra-violent look at cops and robbers kind of working together. And I'm only a few episodes in, but I can kind of see that in some ways you see these fake organizations, you see fake cops working with corrupt law enforcement, and you know, it's somebody's making these stories up. And as we've learned from, again, our research, that a lot of these intelligence stories kind of float around and that's how they make it into sort of the popular culture. But I'll include also an article from Reason, how Netflix's new Daredevil series makes torture into a virtue. So I was even just kind of looking more on the esoteric level, but you don't even have to go esoteric to kind of look and see it's a super violent commercial for torture, as we see the same war of terror garbage going on, regardless of which puppet is up.
Yeah, and speaking of torture porn, Zero Dark Thirty, that relates back to the Osama PSYOP as well, so it all comes around.
And we need good news, I think, now, James, and it's sorry sometimes that we end up burying it as the third story on these New World Next Week episodes, but we've made the promise and we've kept it. We've had good news every week on these episodes for 2015. So let's look at nullification spreading as Minnesota invalidates FDA restrictions. This comes from thenewamerican.com, and there are several other articles on this from the 10th Amendment Center and others. When Minnesota State Rep Nick Zerwas was 15 years old, he was told he only had a couple of months to live and informed that he wouldn't be able to get a heart transplant. Zerwas was told by his doctor that he might be saved by a surgical procedure that was still experimental. Said Zerwas, quote, "That was my right to try. I fully believe life is worth fighting for, and government has no role in getting in the way," end quote. On May 1st, Zerwas' bill, the Minnesota Right to Try Act, passed the State House unanimously, 123-0. It had previously passed the State Senate, and on May 5th, the governor of Minnesota, Mark Dayton, signed it into law. So in general, the FDA prohibits access by patients to experimental drugs. But under its expanded access provision, the FDA allows patients with serious or life-threatening diseases access to them, but only with its express prior approval. Minnesota effectively nullified the FDA's rule and allows Minnesotans direct access to manufacturers with such drugs. Minnesota is the 16th state to nullify this FDA rule, while more than 20 other states are considering similar messages in announcing this modest victory of states' rights over federal overreach. The 10th Amendment Center said, although these laws only address one small part of FDA regulation, they provide us with a clear model demonstrating how to nullify federal statutes that violate the Constitution. So, James, as we noted, 16 and counting other states looking at this, and it is an outline, it is a blueprint, and the little successes that happen in smaller places we can use, again, as an open source map to implement these things. And the two words are decentralize and nullify. James?
I agree completely. Nullification is a wonderful idea, wonderful concept, one that we can all get behind, whether you believe in the fantasy unicorn elephant of government or not. So I still think nullification is a wonderful and practical tool for getting rid of some of the excessive and ridiculous regulations and restrictions that the federal government attempts to impose without any sort of even fictional governmental authority. And just continuing a little bit with that that article, nullification is based on the view that states are the final authority in determining the limits of federal power. It embodies the concept expressed by Thomas Jefferson: whensoever the central the general government assumes undelegated powers, its acts are unauthoritative, void, and of no force. And that's noteworthy for a couple of reasons, one of them being that whensoever is a wonderful word, which we should use more often. But that's it. I mean, nullification is a great concept, and I talked about it specifically with regards to the NSA and how we could nullify the NSA in a previous episode of the Corbett Report and a previous conversation I had with the 10th Amendment Center. So that's in the Corbett Report archives. I hope people will check into that and start thinking about different ways that they can implement it at their own local levels, because nullification is about local levels telling the bigger centralized structures what to do, and it's devolving power back closer to the people. Still not close enough for my liking, but closer. And I think that is a step in the right direction. So nullification is a wonderful idea that can be implemented at your local level. I suggest people start taking a look at the ways they can do it in their own backyards.
A couple of other good news next week notes, James. A giant man-made hole in the Earth's atmosphere is closing. And a question: is the New World Order dying? ActivistPost.com has an article about 10 recent headlines that offer hope. And James, perhaps you and I might go into that in the future and look at some of the ways about whether or not we do think, you know, the New World Order is losing or we are winning, and the ins and outs of that. So good news can keep coming if you use hashtag good news next week. Meanwhile, some of the other stories that we've been following and been reporting for you here on New World Next Week come via some of our friends on Twitter, like Mamik and, of course, our good buddy Brock West. The White House was briefly on lockdown today. That's May 14th after a drone incident. And Subway, the sandwich restaurant, now has intruder spray. They have a traceable synthetic DNA mist that they will spray on you. Meanwhile, Denmark keeps the demonization of cash going. Stop printing money is going to happen in the Denmark Central Bank. Shops can refuse to accept notes and coins. And in Arizona, right in America's Southwest, which I drove around last week while I was off from New World Next Week, fake cactuses host hidden license plate cameras in Arizona. So, James, it depends sometimes on maybe when you ask me about whether or not I think the New World Order is winning or losing, because given each day, my thoughts kind of change about it. And I think we'll have to go into that in the future.
Well, it is a mixed bag, but we also have to see what's happening in a positive sense so that we can steer it in that direction. And on that note, that Activist Post article you mentioned about 10 signs the NWO is dying includes Montana passes a law to nullify militarization of police. So again, nullification popping up. All right, lots of great information here. Tons and tons of information in the links that we provide. Please do look at the show notes that James puts together for each episode. They have tons of information in them, and lots of links to keep you busy until next week's episode. So until then, James, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, buddy.